Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
When someone writes a book called Shoot Me First, they've immediately got my attention. Grant Locke is a really interesting character with an arresting life story. He actually went off and did what I expect many of us feel like doing often, but we never do. He and his wife were so challenged by the daily news, current affairs, world issues, so much so that they actually acted on it. Grant packed up his life in South Australia, moving to Pakistan, later Afghanistan, with his family, a Christian serving in a Muslim country. He lived there for the next 24 years, building schools, managing health projects, empowering Afghan women, witnessing firsthand lives transformed by Jesus. He worked in the town where Osama bin Laden was captured, hid a high school girl from the Taliban. These stories he has to tell are astonishing, amazing, and God-driven. Grant's book is Shoot Me First, A Cattleman in Taliban Country. Grant, welcome to Open House.
Thank you very much, Lee.
It's a great privilege to meet you, Grant. You were living in South Australia with your wife and kids, working as a cattleman. It was your wife who was initially so challenged by the news, and she says to you, isn't there more to life than driving around on a tractor?
Yeah, she actually said, Grant, there must be more to life than driving around on a tractor and meeting yourself in the middle.
I know what that feeling's like. I've got a good mate in a South Australian farm, and we've done that. What was your answer to that?
My answer was, if God wants us somewhere else, he's big enough to tell us. And so we'll just carry on serving here. And if he wants us to know, he will tell us somehow.
How did he tell you then?
Well, I was at a conference, and at the end of the conference, I had this voice without a voice inside me, Pakistan. And I just knew that God wanted us to go to Pakistan.
That seems a curious bit of guidance to many people.
Well, it was very clear, and that really made it so much easier to make the break and to change our direction, because it's pretty hard to move a guy who's involved in agricultural business, farming and stud cattle breeding, to make a big change, because they're usually very committed in what they're doing. But God made it so clear.
How would you have described your life before this word Pakistan came into your mind?
Very active, very busy. We were breeding some of the best stud beef cattle in Australia and travelling all over Australia related to our business, plus the agricultural side, the cropping and Christian ministry and working with other Christian farmers. Yeah, very busy.
It's a lot to give up.
People say to me, Grant, I could never do that. I say to them, look, if you're a Christian, and if God spoke to you as clearly as he spoke to us, I think you'd probably go and do it, same as we did.
Did you have much convincing going on inside your family?
Well, my twin brother, Barry, and his wife, Anne, are both committed Christians. They were naturally reluctant to see a large chunk of the family partnership leaving, but they were very supportive. My dad had a lot of trouble handling it, but he was a leader in agriculture and in the cattle business, and he was also reluctant to see us go and had quite a lot of trouble handling that.
So how do you move practically from, again, that word coming into your mind, Pakistan, to actually packing up and leaving? So where do you go in Pakistan?
We work with CMS, the Church Missionary Society, and off we went, and our first appointment was seconded to the Church of Pakistan, who wanted to set up a base to serve people in the heaviest populated desert in the world. It involved a bit of agriculture, but it was very much leadership, preparing the way for a Pakistani team to come out to the Thar Desert, particularly to set up community development and also big need for women's health and children's health. And the first thing I did was put a stock-proof fence around the 5 acres of land that they had purchased out there, this sandy ground, and dug a well and started tree planting on this sandy ground, and then doing all the planning and the budgeting and working with agencies preparing for this team to come out.
Was there much of a culture shock for you and your family?
Yes, it was quite a lot of culture shock. Our first Christmas out there, we were invited to join the village, and they said, yep, you'll join us for Christmas for lunch. And so a bunch of them gathered around this great big huge pot of rice with potato in it. That was a bit of a change from what we'd been used to for Christmas. And the kids' jaws, we took our three kids with us, and their jaws were sagging a bit. And
I bet.
Jana fortunately had a packet cheesecake back in our house, and she whipped that up, and that was Christmas.
What do you reckon God taught you in those first few weeks and months in such a different place?
Well, you move into a culture which is so different. You need to adapt to fitting into their culture, wearing what they wear, and accepting the way they do things, and then get into language. That gives you relationship with people, and we were very much privileged that we were able to do that rather than being, say, a UN person on a contract for 18 months and has got to do a certain amount of stuff in that period of time, doesn't have time to commit to language. It's hard yards, but we were able to live amongst the people and not be cloistered away, and that was a great opportunity to get to know people.
And with this, there's a great sensitivity about questions of faith.
Yes, we were there to serve the people, and if somebody said, funny why you're breaking your neck to stay here and we're breaking our necks to leave, we would say, come and have a cup of tea and we'll tell you why, and we'll tell you who it is who has called us to come and serve you.
And that came quite naturally, and there was no fear about that?
No, it did come naturally, but particularly in Afghanistan, if people did want to have deeper conversations, you had to be sensitive about it.
Did you have a goal that you set out to achieve when you went there?
Well, I think the goal was just to follow God's leading, serve the people, and show them the face of Jesus Christ. God's Spirit is out there working ahead of us, and sometimes, you know, you feel like you're clearing rocks off the field. Other times you feel like you're sowing a little bit or watering, and occasionally you're doing a little bit of reaping.
On Open House, we're with Grant Locke, author of the book Shoot Me First, A Cattleman in Taliban Country. So let's get to the title. That comes from a very scary encounter that you had, Grant. Can you take us through that?
I was rebuilding a girls' school near the border of Afghanistan and Pakistan, where the Taliban are so active now. My small assistant, a Pakistani assistant, came rushing up to me. His name was Samson, and he came up to about my shoulder, and he said, "Hey, Mr. Locke, jaldi jaldi, idhar aao, wo bahut bahut naraz hain. Come quickly, they're very, very angry." So I went out into the lane, through the gate, high walls all around, which is the way people live there, and there was this big gang of men with beards and guns, and this burly leader strides up to me and says, "If you do not stop your workmen, we will shoot them." I tried to explain to him, "Look, we're reopening this school, we're rebuilding it, this is for your kids, your Muslim kids, and for the few Christian kids in town, it's for them. I don't get anything out of it." Of course, they expect that anybody doing this sort of thing is going to get a big kickback from some big contractor. But he said, "If you do not stop your workmen from working, we will shoot them." I remembered the girl I'd met the day before. She said, "I want an education. One day I want to be a doctor." And I straightened up and I looked this guy in the eye and I said, "Well, if you're going to shoot them, you will have to shoot me first."
And what did you think after you said that?
Well, I kind of surprised myself. That, but I thought, look, this is not a fair deal for their community, particularly for their girls and for their granddaughters.
You weren't scared that he might just do that?
I wasn't scared at the time, no. And I think they respect a bit of bravado in that Pashtun-type culture. It didn't do any harm, actually.
What was his problem with the work that your workers were doing?
He had a couple of problems. They weren't particularly interested in girls' education, but also One of his fellow shopkeepers had been building a storehouse into the precincts of the school. And I challenged him the day before, and I said, look, we need all the space we can to rebuild this school, to make it suitable for the girls, and your storehouse is illegal and it will have to go. And if it's not cleared out by tomorrow, I'll bring our workmen from over at the hospital that we are building. So we were working away on that next morning because he didn't move. So that was a part of the background. It was a shame and honour thing that this guy was caught doing something wrong and had to face up to having it removed.
The work eventually went ahead?
The work went ahead. Ultimately, the school got going again and is now in college status, so it's been a great success story for the girls there.
As a person who knows that country of Afghanistan so intimately, how do you reflect on the last decade that that country has known in the midst of war?
It's been another 10 years of war, of the 30 years of war in Afghanistan, and I have to say that I think that, unfortunately, the Americans dropped the ball a bit because after the Taliban did not agree to kind of hand over the al-Qaeda, and it looked as though they'd pushed the Taliban out of the game. They were back into the hills and into the villages, and then America went off to have a fight in Iraq. So the resources were not followed through to when there was a high level of hope to rebuild the country and get education and other stuff going. And then the Taliban started creeping back and gaining a lot of clout. So it's been a time of difficulty and great difficulty for the little people.
Yes.
The biggest problem with the country is corruption. That permeates the whole thing. You've got the drug problem where they grow over 90% of the world's heroin, but it's the corruption that permeates things.
We see the Taliban from a distance as these dark, shadowy, fearful figures. How do you describe them, having seen them up close?
They're motivated by a strong Wahhabi brand of Islamic thinking. But the Taliban is not entirely made up of Islamist people. You've got drug lords in there. You've got warlords in there. You've got criminals who can see they can make money by being on that particular side. And you've got people carrying guns who have to feed their family, and the Taliban will give them some money each day. That's the kind of spectrum of people you have in the Taliban.
Of all the stories, and you've got many great stories in your book, apart from that dramatic moment in that school, is there one other that stands out above the rest for you?
I think the story of the Snow Princess, which was the code name that we gave to a young woman, was a really special event. This high school girl in Afghanistan had been kidnapped by a Taliban-related young warlord who just sent his men to her home and said, we're taking her. And her father, who was an educated man, resisted and dropped dead with a heart attack. And this girl was taken away, forced into marriage, and she was basically kept under lock and key in the extended family home, and they would never let her out of her sight. But one night in winter, when the women all moved to another part of the house to keep warm, she found she was left alone, and by that time she had a little baby girl. And she grabbed the girl, took off through the snow, and if the Taliban, who were running Kabul at that time, had caught her outside, she probably would have been shot, because it was after curfew and she was a woman out by herself. And she was able to get to the home of a friend of her brother, a class fellow, and she said, get me out of here or shoot me. I'm not going back. And he very bravely acted as her husband, and if they'd been caught, they probably would have both been shot, and took her into Pakistan, where we were working at that time. And we helped to hide her from the Taliban connections in Pakistan, who were looking for her, until she was able to leave. And she became a bit like a daughter and with this little granddaughter at the time.
That kind of work is very tricky and sometimes fearful. What did you learn about trusting God throughout it all?
We learned that through the ups and downs, we just knew that God was there. And sometimes you felt, hey, God, what's happening? What's going on? But deep down, you knew that he could be relied on and he would work through things in the finish.
And he did.
He did. And we saw God at work in people's lives.
Now you find yourself back in South Australia, back in Adelaide. Much of a culture shock there, reverse culture shock.
Yes, it is. Australia is sort of like fairyland after being over there. And the fact that we would both like to be back there, but we can't, because of my eyesight problems, which caused me to be compelled to stay back here 4 years ago and start writing. And my wife, Jana, is very much involved with, even now, with supporting Afghan widows and poor Afghan women, like the woman who embraced her, came through the grate and she started crying. She said, I've sold my baby. But that's another story. So Jana has been very much involved in raising funds to send to a trusted connection we have over there, Direct, who knows these women's needs. And now we're having great opportunities to share information and challenge people in Australia as a result of writing Shoot Me First.
It's an important thing that you do. And if that wife of yours, Jana, asked you again, surely there's more to do than driving around on a tractor meeting in the middle. What would you say in answer to that now?
I would say, yes, you were right. We both enjoyed the ride, although it was scary at times, but never boring. And now we're in a different stage of our lives, and we enjoy sharing with people and challenging people and helping them also to understand the way Islam works on the ground and what it is like. I think Australian people need to keep their brains in gear to love Muslims, but also to ask questions about Islam. I think one of the things we've noticed is coming back to the Australian culture, there's this politically correct approach that you're supposed to not ask questions about other people's views and faith because you might be offending them in some way, and so you put your brains to bed. Tolerance, Lee, I think, has changed its meaning over a generation or two. Tolerance used to be that, look, we can discuss, ask each other questions, debate, and agree to differ, but that's okay. But now tolerance is, I don't like you saying anything about anything, Lee, because, that's not right. You should be tolerant. And it seems to cut down a lot of sensible debate and discussion.
Grad Locke, it's been fascinating exploring your story, an important one to write and put out there. The title again is Shoot Me First, A Cattleman in Taliban Country. Grant Locke, thanks so much for joining us on Open House.
You're welcome, Lee, and the book's also available not only in bookshops and Christian bookshops, but on Amazon and the Kindle program.
We'll put the details up on our Open House community Facebook page. Thanks, Grant.
Thank you, Lee.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.